The date is December 20th, 2019, just a day or so until the winter solstice. And according to the ancient druidic prophecy, that means it's time for another episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. The new year is going to bring a bunch of new faces to the DC Improv. In fact, January 23rd to the 26th, we'll have us a bona fide DC Improv debut. That is when Fahim Anwar comes to town. Like many rising comedy talents these days, Fahim wears a lot of different hats. He has been doing stand-up since he was a teenager, and he already has a one-hour special to his name. In fact, I think you can watch it on YouTube. Go check. He's part of the podcast game. You can grab his podcast, Dance Hour, on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. And he's done some very cool things with sketch comedy. Fahim is part of Goatface, a troupe of brown comedians, including, among others, Hasan Minhaj, who had a special on Comedy Central in 2018. And beyond all that stuff, Fahim definitely stands out. He's worked as an aerospace engineer, his parents are Afghan immigrants, and as for the dancing, we'll get to that in a minute. Fahim called in to chat with us on December 17th. Have a listen, get to know him, then get your tickets to see him, January 23rd to 26th at the DC Improv. Fahim, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am quite well. I am chatting to you in the middle of the holiday season, so it behooves me to ask, are you a holiday guy? Do you enjoy this time of year?
Oh, man, I love it. And it's not, I don't do the war on Christmas, man. I'm all about it, even though, you know, we don't really do Christmas, but it's just a great festive time of year. How can you not love it?
Well, for people who don't know, you say we don't really do Christmas. Your family is from where?
Afghanistan, but I was born in Seattle. So, very American guys. You don't have to worry.
Phew!
Oh, yeah. I love pie and all that. I love pumpkin spice latte. I'm a quick convert, dude.
So, what is the holiday traditions for you? Is it just the usual, I forget if it's secular or non-secular, the usual standardized Americanized Christmas? Is that what you go for? Or do you have like traditions
pretty
of your own?
Much. I mean, it's just family. I think it's like no matter what you celebrate or believe in, it's just like a big family time of year because there's all that time off, you know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty much the same vibe, except we don't do presents and everything, but we all kind of meet up around the Bay Area because my mom's side is there. And so every Christmas, I'm always there. Thanksgiving, I'm back home in Seattle. But yeah, it'll be fun to see the cousins and everything, and I'll be there for that. The music, the smell of pine, dude, it's cold. Come on, who can't get into that?
People who live in Florida, that's who. But I'm with you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You know, reading up about you, a couple things always stand out that are mentioned again and again and again when you're profiled or interviewed. A couple things. One is that you started doing stand-up as a teenager, but you, of course, famously also took the step of having a backup plan and getting a degree that is actually useful in aerospace engineering.
Yeah, the backup plan is sort of the first plan for a lot of people. my day job was like a real job.
Yeah, I guess the thing is when we talk to a lot of people who are involved in entertainment or, you know, working their way up the ladder, not a lot of people have, I'll put it this way, such a pragmatic approach. If you always were kind of dreaming of a career in stand-up, what motivated you to attack it this way?
It just seems super logical, and maybe it's the immigrant upbringing as well, just sort of like what is expected of you.
Yeah.
Is kind of insane, you know? It's like, yeah, so me doing engineering was almost kind of even a letdown. But I thought almost everybody goes to college for 4 years anyways, you know? But instead of trying to find myself and bounce around, it's like I was fortunate enough to know what I really wanted to do very young. I was like 17, where I kind of like hatched this plan. And I'm like, look, I'm going to be in college 4 years anyways. Why don't I just get a degree with like teeth so I can actually get a job and support myself, because my parents weren't gung-ho. Like, stand-up comedy is not like a flourishing business in Afghanistan, right?
I thought we saw that.
Get them to understand. Yeah, no, there's not like, there's no hot comedy club in Kabul. Not yet. You know, I'm working on it, but they're they don't get the sarcasm yet. A lot of physical stuff. Soon they'll get sardonic stuff. I'm trying to get up to speed. So yeah, your parents, they don't understand that type of stuff. So, you know, they're not going to like fund this like quote unquote pipe dream. So I'm like, let me get let me just be able to get a degree where I can rely on myself and be self-sufficient. And so, you know, engineering. Because my parents, I was lucky my parents were paying for college.
Yeah.
So I'm like, why not kind of use that money in a good way to get a legitimate degree so I could support myself while I do this artistic stuff on the side until it becomes the main thing.
Having talked to many comedians, I think a lot of people do not have that approach. And I'm curious, do you gravitate?
I guess, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. Like, time is time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who will go. It's the same amount of time.
Yeah.
You just happen to apply yourself a little more in those formative years. Because a lot of people will do communications for 4 years, and then they're like a waiter when they come out to L.A. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it's sort of like, if the acting thing or whatever it is, then it's kind of wasted equity that you've put in, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So why not have a dope career in case it doesn't pan out?
You know, can I ask, so as you're going through college and you're sort of preparing for a career track engineering type thing, you know, in case that ends up being your future, but you're also know in the back of your mind, hey, I want to do stand-up. It's pretty tough to, I would think as a college student, it's pretty tough to sort of, I don't know, prepare yourself professionally for the entertainment world without just kind of jumping into it. Was that something you were studying even while you were in college? Like, hey, this is going to be my strategy. This is how I'm going to figure it out.
I don't know. It just seemed like a very tangible plan for me because school is by day and stand-up is a night thing and a weekend thing.
Yeah.
So the only thing that was sacrificed is like partying. And I was kind of never that guy to begin with. So that's the thing. It's look, if you want to have that 20-year-old Van Wilder experience, maybe this isn't the plan for you. But there's a lot of hours in the day.
Well, let me ask you this. If you insist that you are not a partying Van Wilder type, to use the topical reference.
Yeah. I'm really dating myself with my Van Wilder references.
I was going to ask you this later, but I feel like this is a good time to ask. If you are not the party type, where did you learn to dance? I have talked to many comedians. None of them that I have talked to thus far have had a special section on their website for dance videos, but you do.
Yeah. You know, you got to separate yourself from the rest of the pack. And I feel like dance is a really good distinction. Not a lot of dancing comics out there. I'm trying to take the torch. Yeah, it's just a random thing, I guess, skill set that I have. I like it. There's a novelty in it. Like, especially given my temperament and my personality, no one expects me to be able to dance this well. And I like how much it doesn't make sense. but it came to me just because, like, when I was a kid, I was really into Michael Jackson. I loved his music videos, his music, and I would, like, record his music videos and his concert footage, and I would slow it down, and I would rewind it. So I just tried to dance like Michael Jackson when I was a kid. And I always say, luckily I was never good enough to get on his radar.
You were just the right level of talented.
Yeah. I was good, but not good enough to, you know, raise his antenna. And so I think that's just a good foundation for dance, because I'm getting really into the weeds with dance, my dance philosophy here. But I think he really feels the music. You know, like when Michael Jackson dances.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like he's speaking through his body and the music, like he's feeling it. Sometimes you'll see dancers like Justin Bieber or something, and you see they're just like hitting 1-2 moves that they've learned from a choreographer, but they don't like feel it. So I think that's a good teacher to have just as a foundation of dance. And because I was so young when I was learning, I think if you have rhythm, then it just carries over into your own thing later on.
So have you had any training beyond just trying to emulate what you've seen other people do? Or do you ever take classes or anything like that?
Yeah, no classes. Just I'm from the streets, dude.
So you know what's up.
I'm from the streets. I'm from the cul-de-sacs, the burbs. I'm from, what is it, Mukilteo, Linwood, Woodinville, all the burbs.
All the stuff that I hear in all my favorite gangster rap songs.
Yeah. All the towns no one knows, and I have to say Seattle.
You know, for someone who's trying to, who's, you know, making a name for himself as stand-up and sketch-type stuff, what's your reaction when you put a dance video online and it gets a really great response? Is this like, God damn it, or is it like, hey, this is pretty cool?
I like it because it literally costs me nothing to do, and it's so easy. Like, it's almost frustrating where I'll put a lot of thought into a sketch or a stand-up bit, and I've been crafting it for a while, and then one day I'll just post me dancing to a song I like that literally takes like 30 seconds and that has more views. I'm like, I'm in the wrong biz. I need to convert my Instagram to a purely dance page. Fuck jokes.
Before I get off the subject of dance, I would assume you have some thoughts on the best of, say, the Dance Squad movies. I'm a big fan of the Step Up franchise, but not all of them. Is there one that jumps out to you as the one I should definitely be watching?
Let's see. Yeah, those are good. Did you catch Step Up 3D?
Oh, of course.
Didn't they have a 3D one? I didn't catch it, but I wonder what that's like.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the absurdity of Step Up to the Streets. It just sounds so hilarious.
It was terrible. I remember
having this bit back in the day where I'm like, how many are they going to do? Are they just going to keep on stepping up to various locations? Like each one after, just like step up the surface of Mars or...
The one thing I always wonder whenever I see a Step Up movie is how do the economics of this work? I think the same thing actually when I look at sketch comedy a lot of times. I'm like, there's like 46 people on this crew. There's no way they're getting paid enough money for anyone.
Yeah. I want to be like, it's like such a movie thing, just the logistics of it. Like trying to schedule a dance battle and you're like, well, that doesn't work for me. How does Tuesday next week sound? Right? They all just happen to have their schedules free.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing else going on Friday night, of course.
Yeah, and they're grown adults.
All living in the same abandoned warehouse somewhere on the waterfront district.
Right. Also, how do they support themselves? What's their... Dance is not lucrative.
I would imagine aerospace engineering degrees. That would be my guess.
Yeah, probably. Maybe they're very pragmatic about it.
You know, it's interesting. I was, when you do read, again, it comes up again a lot in the interviews about your background working for Boeing and things like that and being personally responsible for designing the software on the 737. I've read that numerous times. And
like I'm responsible for the Max. That's why, no, I didn't work on the Max. I just wanted to do this podcast, set the record straight. I had nothing to do with that airplane. I work on the 747-8 freighter and passenger. And those are wonderful aircraft.
Solidly built. Good God, God's creatures in the sky, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I only worked on the floor beams, so that's not very sexy.
I guess my question would be, you've now been doing comedy full-time for significantly longer than you were working as an engineer. Do you find it odd sometimes? I put it this way. Do you get tired of people like me asking about it? Or is it still kind of a part of your identity where you still feel like that's an element of who you are?
I know what you mean. I think it is weird, and that's why it comes up a lot. It's just there's not a lot of comedians who have that as part of their trajectory. The same with the dance thing. Like, these are just kind of outliers, so obviously they'll come up a lot. But I guess the one thing, I guess, just me living in this body and experiencing it is, like, it's cool. I like the novelty of it. But the thing is, sometimes it's so weird that it gets glamorized where I'm way more comedian than I am engineer. Like, I started doing stand-up when I was 18, like, before I even went to college to study engineering. So I've been doing stand-up a super, super long time.
Yeah.
And I'm funny for a comedian, even if I didn't have that engineering job. So I think sometimes, or maybe this is just my own, sensitivity to it. It can seem like I won some engineering contest or whatever. Like, there's a novelty, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, he's a comedian, or he's an engineer who does stand up. So he's like funny for an engineer.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, I'm funny for a comedian. Like, the engineering thing just happens to be a factoid.
One thing I always do find interesting is that people who have the capability of being an engineer or the ability to train, that, you know, engineering encourages a certain way of thinking, a way of problem solving, a kind of mindset that sometimes comes with that in terms of achieving goals or solving problems. And I'm always curious, you know, how does that translate to comedy, I guess, in the process of writing a sketch, in the process of preparing stand-up? Do you feel like that mindset has served you well, or is it a different part of the brain you're using when you're doing stand-up?
No, I think it really complements the artistic side of the brain. So there's like two things going on. I think I'm very lucky that I have ideas just come to me. Like, I'm just ready to receive the ideas whenever they come, whether it's a sketch idea or a stand-up bit, I'm just always ready to jot it down. So that's very organic and loose, and it's fun and exciting because you don't know how these ideas come to you. It's just very magical. But the engineering part of my brain, it allows me to apply structure to that inspiration. So I'll know, all right, this bit should go like this, or I could put this here, and then it's good for editing. And also time management as well, like, and setting goals and all that stuff, because you have a lot of workload when you're doing engineering. So to apply the rigors of a real job to something artistic, I think is powerful. Because then you're not like laying on your couch, smoking weed, and just like floating through the universe thinking it'll happen when it happens. you apply a timeline and stuff. You can treat it like an actual job and set goals and everything.
I would agree with that. I mean, my personal experience as a mildly unsuccessful feature act was that I had a journalism background, and that the process of editing and knowing how to edit a sentence structure or a word structure was very useful in the writing sense. And it would always drive me crazy. And people like, I just write on stage. It's, you know, it's just what I do. I don't write anything down. They're like, how do you do that?
Yeah. You know, people are also different to their writing process. I just find for me, I like to know what I want to talk about when I'm on stage or like working stuff out. And I like to use that time, because that stage time is more rare than your time off stage to write about whatever. Yeah. So if you're just fucking around up there, you're kind of squandering a rare resource.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Well, speaking of the stuff we talk about on stage, you are now about, correct me if I'm wrong, about 2 years removed from the release of your first special, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
And where's that available? I know it was on CISO, but CISO no longer exists. So
yeah,
it is.
That was like NBC's quick stab at trying to be a Netflix thing,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But,
what was nice is that it afforded me the opportunity to film a really nice special that I'm proud of. It looks beautiful. And I'm really proud of that first special that I put out there. So it went to CISO, and then it was at Comedy Central and Amazon, I think. But I actually just uploaded it to YouTube. I was like, let me see if I can just upload it to YouTube. And it let me do it. So it's available for free if anybody wants to check it out.
Yeah.
It's called There's No Business Like Show Business.
I've been watching a lot of clips of it, and there's a lot of excellent, excellent material in there. I guess I'm always curious.
Thanks.
Specials are, you know, to talk to a lot of comedians who've done specials, that they're kind of a snapshot of where you are in your career at that time. And people who are seeing that are looking at Fahim from 2 years ago,
For a special. Yeah, that's also really refreshing as well, because I've been chopping it up a little bit and putting it on like IGTV and Instagram. And just the way people view things nowadays, a lot more people are catching it on there than ever did 2 or 3 years ago. And the response is so great. And that makes me feel good, because this is me 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited about, you know, this next, I'm 3 years removed from that, or 2 or 3. So the stuff I have now, I can't wait to put that out, or when that does come out.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So you're coming here in January. You know, you've obviously been building a lot of material over the last 2-3 years. What kind of stuff are you talking about on stage now? What are kind of the bigger themes that you're dealing with for people who are coming to see your live show this next month?
I mean, I guess vibe and tone and everything. I think stylistically, and just sort of my last special is sort of what I do, and it's kind of more of the same, different topics. Just it's observational and fun and silly and smart, and I don't know. It's just a grab bag of a bunch of, there's some relationship stuff in there as well. Yeah, I always view myself as a funny comedian who happens to be brown, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes it's so easy to make snap judgments just in entertainment and the arts and everything. You like see a name and you're like, oh, I think I know what he does. Like, it's going to be just talking about brown shit the whole time, or it's going to be super militant. I just like being, because, you know, I was born in Seattle, right? I'm very American, but that's also part of my identity as well. Like, my parents are from Afghanistan, so I have a unique perspective, but I just like funny.
Yeah.
So I like talking about whatever. So it's less limiting that way.
I was talking for another episode of the podcast earlier the week with Kieran Deal, and I asked basically the same kind of question, that because as we're talking to more and more headliners who are either immigrants or first generation, like I said, is it can it be frustrating to be defined in that way? I know it's something you can clearly talk about, because it's part of what makes your perspective and your viewpoints. A lot of that stuff is informed by that personal experience. But do you ever feel like it's an obligation where you have to talk about it to get other people kind of in tune with that community? Or do you feel like is it a burden or is it both, depending on the day?
Yeah, I think it's whatever you want to make of it. If you lean that way as a brown performer, like, that's fine. It's kind of choose your own destiny. I think what's frustrating, because it's sort of new, this brown performer kind of age we're living in, where we've been in the country long enough to kind of to see more of people of color doing stand-up, is we're in this kind of weird purgatory where if you're just an observational comic like me, this is like industry-wise, let's say, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you're just doing straight-up observational stuff, some people might be like, oh, well, what do I make of that, you know? Like, if they have this type of name and they're just doing regular observational stuff, why don't we just get that from, like, a white guy or something, you know? So if you have, like, a name, you know, an ethnic name or whatever, there is this subtle, maybe because it's all so new and like, the industry doesn't quite know what to make of it yet, where they feel like you have to hit that harder than you may want to as an artist. You know, just because my name is this doesn't mean I have to speak to this experience for a whole hour.
Yeah.
Like, I want to talk about everything. Yeah.
I want to dance.
I think everything. Yeah. I want to dance. So it just takes longer for people to kind of know what your vibe is.
Yeah.
So that's just like a struggle, I guess, of like artistry and industry kind of waiting for the gears to match up. But artistically, you could do whatever you want on stage. That's the beauty of stand-up. That's your show when you're up there, and you could do whatever.
Well, you're obviously coming to the improv to do stand-up. I do want to ask you, since we have you, I want to ask you a little about some of your success in the sketch world, because, you know, many people, spread themselves out and try a lot of different things. You've had a lot of success with the goat face. I really enjoyed the special that came out a little while back.
Oh, thanks. I'm really proud of that special.
Yeah, I know you guys did a lot of videos more back a couple of years. Is there anything in the works with that? I'm sure it's very hard to schedule the more and more successful the various people within the group become, right?
It's tough. I mean, I don't know. I would love to do more goat face stuff in the future. Right now, just that 1 hour sketch special we did for Comedy Central was the last thing we did. So right now it's on the back burner. Everyone's so busy. I don't know if we're doing more of it, but I definitely love sketch, and I want to cultivate that in the future as well. Like, stand up and sketch are my two favorite things. So obviously I want to do more of that.
Is it a debate to you as to which one is your most favorite? I mean, I they're both rewarding. It's both a very different structure, both a very different way of operating. Is the, like I said, is there one that you prefer? Or is it just a
I'm all
kind?
About funny ideas.
Yeah.
I'm all about funny ideas. And then I think, what is the best delivery system for this idea?
Yes.
If it's very dialogue driven, then I go, this is more of a sketch. And then I kind of write the sketch out. If there's so many moving parts, then I'm like, all right, I need to do like a produced sketch for this. But sometimes if I can explain it pretty easily with a mic, then I'm like, that's a good stand-up idea. I've gotten very good at just knowing what box to put what idea in.
That I find fascinating, because one of the most frustrating things for me is watching, for lack of a better term, when you see like an alternative comedian who's doing this incredible flight of fancy, and you can sell it as a stand-up, but I'm also like, this is a sketch. Why are they doing this as stand-up?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And then, if they're like playing both characters, moving to the sides of the stages, like, you need shots.
Yeah.
You're trying to do a sketch on stage. And if it's skeleton enough, you can get away with it. But if there's just too many characters and moving parts and stuff, then it's just better as a sketch. But it was cool to do that goat face special because, you know, we were doing goat face. We were doing stuff on YouTube for a long time, just for the love of the game sketches before anyone was anybody, you know, like Hassan wasn't as big as he was at the time. And we were just doing all these great sketches on YouTube for like no money. And it looked great. Aristotle's such a great director and performer. And I think if you don't come through UCB or Groundlings, you don't get the love in the sketch world that those schools kind of give you, because I thought we were four stand-ups who did sketch very well, but we didn't quite get that love because we didn't come through the traditional ranks. We were on the outskirts doing stand-up. So it was cool to do Goat Face and really show the world Like, we do sketch pretty well.
Another thing I find interesting is that sketch is, it's a different, I don't want to say ecosystem, but yeah, it's a different network, it's a different, you know, it's a different path, and I find it very interesting when people are trying to find a way to, particularly in an age where now you can deliver this stuff online without the benefit necessarily of a Saturday Night Live or a, you know, something else.
Yeah. It is very democratic the way the internet has opened everything up. It's exciting, because before, you kind of had to come through a traditional way, or those schools, say, sketch-wise. And if you didn't come through that school, you couldn't be seen. Whereas now people are doing some exciting things on Instagram or YouTube, and you can't deny some of the quality of some of the stuff out there. And people are able to get seen and get opportunities just based on the quality of the work without going through some of the bureaucratic process.
So what was the, was there a sketch group for you that you enjoyed watching that was kind of like inspirational to you that really kind of pushed you to try this, or was it a broad interest?
Well, SNL is kind of what got me into stand-up, because I grew up, I think, you know, a lot of times the question comes up in interviews, like, who do you like, or what were your influences?
Yeah,
for me,
yeah.
It wasn't stand-up. Stand-up didn't hit my radar till much, much later. I think I was like 16 or 17 when I kind of realized stand-up was out there. But I grew up on The Simpsons, Late Night Conan, and SNL. And I loved SNL. So then I researched how did people get on that show. And it was through improv or stand-up.
Yeah.
And then stand-up just seemed more doable for me. So that's why I did stand-up.
Very pragmatic. Very engineering-like decision.
Yeah, because it's just you out there. Like, I don't have to rely on other people to do a scene. I don't have to pay money to take classes.
Yeah.
You get as much as you give into it.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's crazy. I mean, so when you're focusing on stuff in the modern day, you're thinking, oh, am I, you know, like I said, it's hard to get sketch stuff off the ground. How do you find the time to do both as one who's also working as a touring stand-up from time to time? You know, how do you find the time?
Well, now, I mean, stand-up is my main thing. You know, I'm doing a lot of that, especially around LA. I'll do spots and then I'll pop out and do like DC, work on this new hour and kind of tour it. But I'll do sketch in a very stripped down way, because I always get so many ideas. And I've been doing just little easy things on Instagram where there's a novelty in how unproduced it is.
Yeah.
And it's just idea driven. So I'm able to scratch that sketch itch just doing these kind of person talking to each other scenes, or you could do quite a lot with very little on your iPhone.
Yeah.
So that's been scratching the sketch itch. And I have other notes in my phone for like more produced sketches that I would love to do once another goat face comes around, or it's like a, once I have a sketch show thing going on, because then I'll have production value and an actual budget to see some of these bigger ideas through. So it's just a waiting game. Even when we did goat face, I had all these ideas that I had been stockpiling over the years, just waiting for the day you get to do them. And so the same is true of now.
Yeah. Since you mentioned it, what's your Instagram handle for people who do not know?
Oh, it is at Fahim Anwar, so FahimAnwar.
And I have been watching those as well in preparation for your arrival. It is good stuff.
Yeah. I'm just doing Instagram videos on stage. I'm just filming myself. You're like, what kind of show is this?
We've had some IG creators who did not do a good show, so I think you would actually do a good one.
Yeah, you know, the thing is with the IG creators is like, it's more of a meet and greet for their fans.
Yeah.
The thing with stand-up is, it is an art that takes a long time. You just have to put in the hours to be good at it. It's like anything else. And I think with the internet, for as great as you're able to build a following, just hitting the stage and saying I'm a stand-up now, it's harder. It's like easier said than done.
You'll
get a lot of these YouTubers and Instagram people who are up there, but they haven't been doing the craft of stand-up for that long. So it's more of just like a meet and greet for their fans. They're just excited to get their picture taken with them afterwards.
They should
just do like Q&A with them, or an evening with.
Yes. And in some cases, there are a few people who have successfully sort of figured out enough to put together a passable or a good show.
A semblance of a set, but yeah. It's still bizarre. It'd yeah. be like if I got big on the internet and then I'm doing like an R&D tour.
You should! Nothing but...
You know? Like, look, I have an audience. It's time for me to do R&B.
Oh, man. You just go out with like Jabberwockies or something like that? I feel like you could do this.
Yeah.
It could work.
I used to do Keith Sweat covers.
Why not? I'm envisioning this now, and I want to see it very, very badly.
Yeah. It's purely a cash grab. There's just R&B clubs that I'm trying to. I'm like, I don't know why R&B clubs exist, but they want to book me, and I'm not going to leave this money on the table.
Well, I got two more questions for you, then we'll let you go. I know you mentioned you obviously have all these different comedic pursuits. We know you enjoy dancing. But beyond that, if you have a free day, if you're looking to kick back and relax, what does Fahim Anwar like to do?
Man, I'm very basic. I'll watch a movie. I'll just watch some to catch up on a TV series. I like vegetating at a diner, just eating breakfast at a diner and staying there way too long and just listening to music on my phone. I'm not rock climbing or anything. I don't care about that. I just like chilling. Although, there was a time where I was doing like pickup basketball and stuff, and that can be fun. But yeah, I'm not too adventurous. I'm pretty basic.
Very good. He's a basic bitch who loves to dance.
I'm a basic bro, dude.
And then the last question before we let you go. I'm convinced I will be at your shows January 23rd to the 26th at the Improv. But if anyone is listening to this and is not yet convinced, what's the elevator pitch? How are you going to sell them 90 seconds on coming to see you January 23rd to 26th?
Easy. Yeah. Boom. All right. Just go to my Instagram and look at some stuff. If you're not into it, yeah, you don't like my vibe. But that's like everything is there. I've got sketches. I've got stand-up clips. Just go to the Instagram. And if you're into it, great. And if not, no hard feelings. Have a good life.
One-stop shopping for all your Fahim Anwar needs. Yeah, at Fahim Anwar. Yeah, very cool. Well, I really look forward to seeing you do your thing in January. Have a great holiday season, and we look forward to meeting you next month.
Thanks so much, man. I'm looking forward to it, too.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Fahim Anwar, who is an excellent comedian and, again, had nothing whatsoever to do with the Boeing 737 MAX. Ha! Fahim is at the DC Improv January 23rd to the 26th. That's a Thursday through a Sunday, and all shows are just $20. It's going to be a good time. You can get your tickets and watch some videos of Fahim doing stand-up over at dcimprov.com. And like we said in the interview, if you want even more Fahim, one-stop shopping, go to his Instagram feed. That's at Fahim Anwar, FahimAnwar. With all that said, let's wrap this up, shall we? Sure, we all have to go anoint ourselves in sacred oils and sacrifice a goat before the solstice arrives. Let's just be real. Our thanks to Fahim Anwar for calling in to chat with us. Our thanks to you for taking the time to listen. And hey, we would love to see you at the club in January for Fahim shows, for any shows. But however you're choosing to spend your cold winter nights, we sincerely hope you spend part of them laughing. Thanks again. And we'll see you on the other side.